I'm going to speak today on the massacre of innocent people in Las Vegas in a moment, but first, other news. Tax reform. The president has asked Congress to do what they should have done decades ago, reform the tax system. Make it simple to file taxes and let workers keep the money they now have to pay to get their taxes filed. For decades, liberal Democrats have blocked such reform. Ironically, it is their main constituents who pay little or no tax at all. Their shrill voices remain the same. Any tax cut is for the rich. In the eyes of career Democratic politicians, they know better, but that's their mantra. That way, they keep their voters stirred up. While it is true that a few rich people in this country inherited their wealth, it is also true that they are in a small minority. Still, even those who inherited wealth received it from somebody who earned it. Most so-called rich Americans earn their wealth through hard work, sacrifice, and determination, something that the main constituency of the Democratic voters refuse to even consider. Instead, they want to take from those who achieve and demand even more. Now, I know something about this issue because I was born into a financially poor family. We did not have many of the luxuries that people today take for granted, such as no electricity, no running water in the house, no indoor toilets, and no welfare. I floundered like most people in such a situation, but never gave up. I never considered that I was entitled to what somebody else had. The color of my skin brought me no privileges. By the grace of God, I found myself in the Navy, basically because I had nowhere else to turn. It was there that the discipline and self-reliance I would need in life was drilled into me. By His grace, I was led to broadcasting. But that did not move me out of the financial difficulty most of us endure. What did turn the page for me was extreme hard work, great sacrifice, and the determination to rise from poverty and become financially secure. There were plenty of roadblocks on the way, many times when it seemed easier to give up and settle for less. That is the road that most Americans take. They blame their own failure on others. This is the greatest country of opportunities in the history of the world. To be sure, it is not easy to reach our goals, but most never even set goals. They can roll with the flow and gripe. Blacks are told that they can't succeed because of the color of their skin. Whitey is against them. Most of the community of whiteys are in the same financial boat as their black counterparts, but that's overlooked by race baiters who make a handsome living keeping blacks angry at so-called white privilege. Tell that to Oprah Winfrey and other incredibly rich black people. Tell that to my own father, who had to leave school and go to work after the third grade in the wake of the Great Depression. His skin was white, but he labored all of his life as a body and fender repairman who had to take on outside jobs to simply feed his family. He still never accepted welfare. Having divided the races over the years, the attention now is on dividing men and women. Michelle Obama recently attacked women who voted for Donald Trump. She said that women who voted for Trump against Hillary Clinton were voting against their own voice, that they should have been obligated to vote for the woman in the race. And yet, when her own man, Barack Obama, ran against this same woman, Michelle voted for the man, not the woman. It is such liberal ignorance that threatens us all. Forces inside our own country are destroying us, just as communism predicted decades ago. Sadly, too many Americans drink the liberal Kool-Aid and fail to see the end rushing at us. Now, what I'll tell you next is from a narrative taken from a September 7, 2008, Sunday morning televised Meet the Press. If you voted for Barack Obama, you can thank the liberal fake news media we're not telling you the truth about this man. Then Senator Obama was asked about his stance on the American flag. General Gann of the United States Air Force, retired, asked Obama to explain why he didn't follow protocol when the national anthem is played. The general stated to Obama that according to the United States Code, Title 36, Chapter 10, Section 171, during the rendition of the national anthem, when the flag is displayed, all present are expected to stand at attention facing the flag with their right hand over their heart, or at the very least, stand and face it. Here's what Obama said. He said, "As I've said about the flag pin, I don't want to be perceived as taking sides. There are a lot of people in the world to whom the American flag is a symbol of oppression. The anthem itself," he said, "conveys a warlike message. You know, the bombs bursting in air and all that sort of thing." Obama continued, "The national anthem should be swapped for something less parochial and less bellicose. I'd like the song, 'I'd like to teach the world to sing,'" he said. "If that were our anthem, then I might salute it. In my opinion," Obama said, "we should consider reinventing our national anthem, as well as redesigning our flag, to better offer our enemies hope and love. It's my intention," he said, "if elected, to disarm America to the level of acceptance to our Middle East brethren. If we, as a nation of warring people, conduct ourselves like the nations of Islam, where peace prevails, perhaps a state or period of mutual accord could exist between our governments. When I became president," Obama said, When I become president, I will seek a pact of agreement to end hostilities between those who have been at war or in a state of enmity, and a freedom from disquieting oppressive thoughts. We as a nation have placed upon the nations of Islam an unfair injustice, which is why my wife disrespects the flag, and she and I have attended several flag-burning ceremonies in the past. Of course, now," he said, "I have found myself about to become the President of the United States, and I have put my hatred aside. I will use my power to bring change to this nation and offer the people a new path. My wife and I look forward to becoming our country's first black family. Indeed, change is about to overwhelm the United States of America." You heard that right. Now, here's what Russian President Vladimir Putin said at that time. He said, "Negotiating with Obama is like playing chess with a pigeon. The pigeon knocks over all the pieces on the board and then struts around like it won the game." Some question why Obama is still mentioned since he's out of office. The reason is simple. What Obama did to this country lives long after his term in office. Obama bluntly told the whole world what he intended to do to the United States. Predictably, the fake news media refused to tell you. They even cooperated on keeping Obama's Muslim past from us and never questioned why his past records were sealed away to prevent us from knowing of his communist parents and mentors. The rest is history. Obama did what he said he would do with the help of a corrupt Democrat Party who cared more about power than their country. We may never recover, but thankfully, the American people have rose up at the polls and denied Hillary Clinton and the career Democrats from being elected to drive the final nail in the coffin that Obama prepared for us. Let me answer the question on the front of Hillary's book. What happened? The American voters realized what an evil, untrustful person Hillary Clinton was and how the Democratic Party has been hijacked by a core of liberal politicians. These sleaze merchants like Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Harry Reid, Maxine Waters, and a host of others had pulled off the greatest con in history. But the average, ordinary American finally saw them for what they were: a dishonest, power-hungry mob of opportunists who would stop at nothing to divide this country. Let me make it clear. Donald Trump is not a perfect man. None of us are. He does speak off the cuff, and occasionally he says things better left unsaid. Liberals will take every comment the man utters and reduce it to some unconnected relevance. They attacked Trump for saying that NFL owners should fire those disrespecting our flag and national anthem. Now, I agree that Trump should not have used the SOB reference. But what about Samuel L. Jackson, the liberal actor who suggested that Trump had a sexual escapade with Jackson's mother using the MF words? Liberals found no concern with that language when it came from other liberals. That is the hypocrisy of the left. Look at the fake news reports from the media on Puerto Rico. That island was hit by 3 massive hurricanes in a matter of weeks. One would be devastating, but 3? Puerto Rico is an island. It was near bankruptcy due to years of corruption. Its infrastructure was rotting away before the hurricanes. By the time Hurricane Maria hit the island full force, Puerto Rico was a country in name only. Donald Trump did not have a hand in any of Puerto Rico's destruction. The 8 years of Bill Clinton, 8 years of George Bush, and 8 years of Barack Obama, 24 years in all, saw no actions to have Puerto Rico end the corruption or to embark on a campaign to repair its infrastructure. We are now told that the American taxpayers may have to bail out the burden, the debt, by forgiving Puerto Rico's debts. They owe $74 billion in debts and $53 billion in unfunded pensions. Still, liberal Democrats and the fake news media find fault with recovery efforts under Trump, dismissing the fact that the Trump administration is tied down in Florida, in Texas, along the Gulf Coast, and all other areas like the Virgin Islands when Maria hit Puerto Rico. These deceitful pundits pretended that the help needed in Puerto Rico was delayed. That's a blatant lie, and they know it. More than 13,000 Trump assignees are in Puerto Rico, coordinating the recovery efforts. The airports there had to be repaired before supplies could be flown in. Electricity was out all over the island. Roads and bridges destroyed. Only 20% of the union truck drivers reported for work. Badly needed supplies then were sitting on the ground waiting to be delivered, but no one to deliver them. Liberals, backed by the fake news media, attacked Trump for not being presidential enough. But we elected him because he was not presidential, as his predecessors have been. They were career politicians who had mastered the art of deception. They had learned to say only what was politically correct. Trump doesn't want to be presidential in the form we've witnessed in the past. We should not want him to be a political puppet. We have had plenty of those. Now the question is asked, what caused the mass shooting in Las Vegas last week? We don't know yet. All of the facts are not in behind this madman's killing spree. But that hasn't kept gun control fanatics from revising calls to disarm the American people. Career Democrats have used that tactic for decades. The truth is, the gun laws already on the books are not enforced, and mass killers do not follow gun laws anyway. The cities and states with the strongest gun laws in America are where the greatest violence occurs. Democrats refuse to acknowledge that they have controlled cities like Chicago and Baltimore for many decades, and that each weekend sees killings and shootings there in the teens. It is not a problem that they can solve by more gun laws. For years, I have editorialized about the true cause of mayhem we are experiencing today. America turned away from God years ago, and our children were left without a rudder in their lives and at the mercy of progressive liberals in our schools and universities. At Drexel University, a professor has called for the elimination of white people, the elimination of white people for years, and yet he keeps his job. How do young minds cope with such racist instruction, blacks or whites? Multiply this racist professor by many others that have infested our learning institutions. Yet liberal America, teachers' unions, and the fake news media refuse to unmask this travesty. Our children have not been taught what they need to succeed in life. Instead, they have been indoctrinated with hate for their own country. We still need to discover facts about the Las Vegas shooter, but I will venture an opinion that what we will find is a man who did not attend church, did not worship God. Was he radicalized? What political party did he belong to? His picture has appeared at an anti-Trump rally. Was he driven by hate for Trump? This shooting incident in Las Vegas is difficult for us to comprehend. We will, over the next few days and weeks, learn the truth about what this evil man decided to do. He sprayed bullets down on a crowd of country music fans, people known for their love of their country and their God. They were conservative people for the most part. Most had voted for Donald Trump. This madman attacked those values. ISIS has claimed responsibilities three times now for this madman's actions. They say that he was radicalized in Islam. We'll eventually know the truth. So far, it's all conjecture. Was he part of the Infatah hate group? The truth will eventually be known. What we do know is that there is a compelling reason for him to attack innocent people at a country music concert. A crowd of patriotic, conservative, Christian people. There is more to this than meets the eye. The answers are in our hearts and minds, not in the barrel of guns. We can agree that we need to stop mentally disturbed people from buying guns, but nobody has suggested how that can be done. We need to eliminate the ability to turn ordinary rifles into automatic weapons, and we need to examine anything else that would be helpful. But no new gun laws are the answer of the increasing violence in America. That answer is to turn back progressive liberalism and their disdain for religion. Morality is not being taught. I was first taught to use a gun safely at the age of 10. I hunted for rabbits and squirrels to supplement our grocery bill as a young man. I was taught to value my relationship with God and to know the difference between right and wrong. I was not taught to hate people because of skin color or because they were among the so-called rich people. In school, I had teachers who taught me reading, writing, and arithmetic without injecting political correctness on their personal political opinions. In sports, I was taught discipline and the value of working together with others for a common goal. Our young people today are confronted, especially in college, with teachers who reject the methods I've just mentioned. Young white people are taught to have remorse about what their ancestors did more than 150 years ago, and for which they have no more need for remorse than a black person whose ancestors captured and sold other blacks into slavery, or black ancestor headhunters and cannibals of darkest Africa. Are black people today responsible for those ancestors' actions? Young black people are being taught to hate all things white. In today's politically correct world, white people, especially white men, are the only group of people that it's okay to discriminate against. When a white man commits a crime, it's okay to lump all white people together as guilty. We are admonished not to blame all Muslims for the actions of a few Muslims, and not to blame all black people for the actions of other black people, but these same people admonishing us to turn around and do what they ask us not to do. Would-be role models in professional sports are teaching our children to dishonor America. I'll have more on that next week, and what I'm going to tell you about these protests will curl your hair. Even if you're bald, the hair in your ears will curl. They point to an inequity, but Who among my listeners has any equality with athletes who make millions of dollars a year playing games? These athletes were led by the actions of Colin Kaepernick, who took a knee while the national anthem played at a San Francisco 49ers game. Others joined him to show solidarity. Kaepernick had found a Muslim girlfriend who radicalized him. He wore socks that proclaimed that policemen and women were pigs. When the public struck back at the box office, these athletes began to claim that they were really praying when they took a knee. That's a blatant lie, and they know it, put forth to excuse their inexcusable behavior. These athletes have been privileged all of their lives because of their ability in sports. Another excuse for dishonoring our country is the blacks who have been killed in police confrontations. I'll tell you more about that next week. Heather McDonald spoke of the dishonesty of this claim in February 2016 after great research. She found that commentators have taken data from the Washington Post's research as evidence that the police are gunning down unarmed blacks out of an implicit bias. But a close examination of the facts presents a more complicated picture of policing and casts doubt on the notion that these shootings were driven by race. The Post began its police shootings project in response to the 2014 killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, a death that triggered days of rioting, looting, arson, and the assassination of two New York police officers, and a surge of support for the Black Lives Matter movement. Federal tallies of lethal police shootings are notoriously incomplete. As of January 15, 2016, the Washington Post, a liberal newspaper, had documented 987 victims of fatal police shootings for the year 2015, about twice the number historically recorded by federal agencies. Whites were 50% of those victims. Blacks were 26%. By comparison, whites are 62% of the U.S. population, and blacks only 13%. The ensuing debate has largely centered on whether the disproportionate number of black deaths was the result of police racism or the relatively high rate of crime in black neighborhoods, which brings black men into more frequent and more fraught encounters with police. But the numbers don't tell the whole story. It's worth looking at the specific cases included in the Post's unarmed victim classification in some detail, since that category is the most politically explosive. The unarmed label is literally accurate, but it frequently fails to convey highly charged policing situations. In a number of these cases, if the victim ended up being unarmed, it was certainly not for lack of trying. At least five black victims had tried to grab the officer's gun or had been beating the policeman with his own equipment. Some were shot from an accidental discharge, triggered by their own assault on the officer. And the two individuals included in the Post's unarmed black victims category were struck by stray bullets aimed at somebody else in justified cop shootings. If these victims were not the intended targets, then racism could not have played a role in their deaths. Michael Brown was a strong-armed robber. We have that on film. He tried to take the gun away from a policeman who he was struggling with, and he wound up being killed. A lot of people suffered because of that one individual. In one of the unintended cases, an undercover cop from the New York Police Department was conducting a gun sting in Mount Vernon, just north of New York City. One of the gun traffickers jumped into the policeman's car, stuck a pistol to his head, grabbed $2,400 and fled the scene. The officer gave chase and opened fire after the thief again pointed a gun at him. Two of the officer's bullets accidentally hit a 61-year-old bystander, killing him. That older man happened to be black, but his race had nothing to do with his tragic death. In the other collateral damage case, Virginia Beach, Virginia officers approached a car parked at a convenience store that had a homicide suspect in the passenger seat. The suspect opened fire, sending a bullet through an officer's shirt. The cops returned fire, killing the assailant, as well as a woman in the driver's seat. That woman entered the Washington Post's database with qualification as an unarmed black victim of police fire. Unfortunately, innocent blacks like the elderly Mount Vernon man probably do face a higher chance of getting shot by stray police fire than innocent whites. But that's because of the violent crime in their neighborhoods. It's so much higher. The per capita shooting rate in Brownsville, Brooklyn, with its legacy of poverty and crime, is 81 times higher than in working-class Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, just a few miles away. This much higher rate of gun violence means that the police will be more intensively deployed in Brownsville, Brooklyn, trying to protect innocent residents and gangbangers alike from shootings. If the police are forced to open fire, in rare instances, a police stray bullet will go astray and hit a bystander. That's tragic. But that innocent's chance of getting shot by police is dwarfed by his chance of being shot in his hood by criminals. Other unarmed black victims in the Post database were so fiercely resisting arrest that the officers involved could reasonably view them as posing a grave danger. In October 2015, a San Diego officer was called to a Holiday Inn in near Point Loma after hotel employees ejected a man, causing a disturbance in the lobby. The officer approached a man casing cars in the parking lot. The suspect jumped the officer and both fell to the ground. The officer tried to tase the man, hitting himself as well. The suspect repeatedly tried to wrench the officer's gun from its holster and continued his assault on the officer after both had stood up. Fearing for his life, the officer shot the man. It is hard to see how race enters into such an encounter. Someone who tries for an officer's gun must be presumed to have the intention of using it. In 2015, three officers were killed with their own guns, which the suspects had wrestled away from them. Similarly, in August 2015, an officer from Prince George's County, Maryland, pursued a man who had fled from a car crash. The man tried to grab the officer's gun, and it discharged. The suspect continued to fight with the officer until he was tased by a second officer and then tackled by a third. The shot that was discharged during the struggle ultimately proved fatal to the suspect. In January 2016, a sheriff's deputy in Strong, Arkansas, responded to a pharmacy burglary alarm in the early morning. The burglar inside fought with the deputy for control of the deputy's gun, and it discharged. The suspect fled the store but was caught outside, at which point the officer noticed the suspect's gun injury and called an ambulance. In several cases in the Post's unarmed black man category, the suspect had gained control of other pieces of an officer's equipment and was putting it to lethal use. In New York City, a robbery suspect caught in a narrow stairwell beat two detectives' faces bloody with a police radio. In Memphis, Tennessee, a 19-year-old wanted on two out-of-state warrants, including a sex offense in Iowa, kicked the car door open during a cop stop, grabbed the officer's handcuffs, and began hitting him in the face with them. In other instances in the unarmed black man category, the suspect's physical resistance was so violent that it could reasonably have put the officer in fear for his life. A trespasser at a motel in Barstow, California, brought a sheriff's deputy to the ground and beat him in the face so viciously that he broke numerous bones and caused other injuries. The suspect refused repeated orders to desist and move away. An officer in such a situation can't know whether he will lose consciousness under the blows to his head. If he does, he is in even greater danger that his own gun will be used against him. An Orlando, Florida officer was called about a fight in an apartment complex. The suspect fought him so violently that the officer's equipment had been torn off and was strewn around the scene, including his taser, baton, gun magazine, and wristwatch. In Dearborn, Michigan, a probation violator escaped from officers after committing a theft. Later in the day, an officer approached him and he began to flee. A fight ensued, which left the officer with his gun belt loosened, his equipment on his belt on the ground, and his uniforms ripped. There are many other incidences I can cite you about supposedly unarmed black men assaulting police. These are the people who Black Lives Matter supports. Their lives, we are told, matter. But what of the police officers' lives? Do they not matter? The Black Lives Matter movement's focus on shootings by police should not distract attention from the most serious use of force problem facing black communities: criminal violence from other blacks. In 2014, there were 6,095 black homicide victims, more than all white and Hispanic homicide victims combined, even though blacks are only 13% of the population. In 90% of those black deaths, 90%, the killer was another black civilian. By all means, we must try to eliminate unjustified use of force by police. But as long as the crime rates in black communities remain so high, officers will be disproportionately engaged there, with all of the attendant risks of such deployment. Police in America are under attack on a daily basis. These men and women have families that worry about their return home each day. Their lives matter too, but not in the eyes of people like Black Lives Matter or the anarchists of Antifa. To listen to Black Lives Matter, the police set out each day looking to kill black people. As you'll hear next week in my commentary, that is patently false, and the incidents have been going down almost 75% since 1968. They never look at the person killed to determine whether or not the killing was justifiable to them. The police are expendable, and all black men are simply victims. How else do you explain why mobs rioted, looted, and burned down Ferguson, Missouri, after a strong-armed robber named Michael Brown was killed trying to take a policeman's gun away from him? The Black Lives Matter crowd spread the word that Brown had his hands up and was begging the officer not to shoot. Even when that was proven false, a lie, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that he did not have his hands up, nor yelling, "Don't shoot." These despicable rabble-rousers have continued to pretend that Brown was an innocent victim of police brutality. That is our world today, and it is getting worse. But we cannot allow these lies, to continue. Think about the loss of innocent black lives if the police walked away from their beat in Chicago, even for a day, even for an hour. Black lives, or white lives, for that matter, only matter when they are not engaged in crime and violence against other people. I hope you'll listen to my commentary next week, because I'll have more on this. The truth is that violence by police against people, including black people, is down 75% since 1968, not up as the fake news media would make you think, or the Black Lives Matter crowd intones. These are facts, and they're facts that the media will not tell you. The truth is, it's not the Black Lives Matter crowd that's our worst enemies. It is the fake news media that covers for them, that refuses to give us truth, and is despicable.